Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. If you're looking for clarity in a world just packed with information, well, you're in the right place.
Absolutely.
Today, we're diving deep into what I think is one of the most important books from the last few years, Dr. Atul Gawande's Being Mortal, Medicine, and What Matters in the End.
Mm-hmm. And it's really not just about death, is it? It's fundamentally about life.
Exactly. How to live well, truly well, right up to the very end.
Yeah.
So our mission today is to unpack Gawande's powerful critique of modern medicine. We want to figure out why our amazing ability to prolong life often seems to, well, sacrifice dignity, autonomy, the quality of that life, especially for older people and those near the end.
It's such a universal challenge, isn't it? Healthcare today is so focused on the technical fix, you know, adding days, that it can end up treating aging and dying like failures, problems to be solved.
Instead of human experiences we need to navigate.
Exactly. And the big question Gawande makes us face is, how do we shift? How do we move from just ensuring survival to actually enabling, you know, human flourishing, a good life for as long as we possibly can?
Okay, so let's talk about Gawande himself for a minute, because his perspective is key here. He's Dr. Atul Gawande, a practicing surgeon, general and endocrine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. So he's deep inside the medical system.
Right. He's an insider. But what makes him so unique is that he's also this incredible writer, a staff writer for The New Yorker.
Yeah, that dual perspective is crucial.
It really is. He understands the technical side, the surgery, the medicine, but he can also step back and see the bigger picture, the human costs, the ethical issues, and then he can write about it in a way that's just so compelling, so clear for everyone.
It's quite brave, actually, critiquing your own profession from the inside like that.
Definitely. It gives his words so much weight.
And there's a personal side, too, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's maybe the most powerful part. He shares his own family story, navigating his father's illness and eventual death. And that experience, it just adds this layer of empathy, you know? It shows that even for an expert, these decisions are incredibly hard, incredibly personal when it's your own family.
Okay, so let's dig into the book itself. What's the absolute core idea of being mortal?
Well, fundamentally, it's a call to completely rethink the last phase of life. Gawande argues that we've essentially medicalized aging and dying in the wrong way.
Treating them like diseases to be cured.
Pretty much, yeah, like a technical puzzle. You know, more tests, more procedures, more drugs.
Yeah.
Always aiming for a fix.
Right.
But he argues this relentless focus on the technical stuff consistently overlooks what actually matters to people at that stage.
Things like independence, purpose.
Exactly. Independence, purpose, connection, meaning. The non-medical things that make life feel worthwhile.
And he points fingers at the institutions too, right? Hospitals, nursing homes.
Oh, absolutely. He shows how these places, even though they're built for care, often end up prioritizing safety and like managing schedules above everything else.
Safety first, always.
Which sounds good, but the result is often environments where dignity, personal choice, even just simple community, they just get squeezed out.
So the book isn't just a critique, though. It's trying to point towards something better.
Yes, definitely. It's about proposing a shift, a more humane approach. Care models that actually start with the individual's values.
Asking what matters to them.
Right. And having those really difficult but absolutely essential conversations about limits, about priorities, so people can face the end on their own terms. Enabling flourishing. Not just extending existence.
Okay, let's dive into some specifics. That institutional critique is pretty stark. He talks about the three plagues of nursing home life.
Loneliness, helplessness, and boredom. It's a devastating diagnosis.
And it's not necessarily because people are cruel, right? It's the system itself.
That's his point. These places are often designed around medical routines and, crucially, eliminating risk. But when you eliminate all risk,
you eliminate choice.
You eliminate choice, autonomy, identity. If you can't decide when to wake up or what to eat or even, you know, take the risk of going outside when you want, are you really living?
It sounds like a kind of spiritual death happening before the physical one.
It can be, which is why the alternative he introduces is so striking. Bill Thomas and the Eden alternative.
Right. This was amazing. What did Thomas do?
It was pretty radical, really. He basically brought life into these often sterile institutions.
Life, like literally.
Literally. Children visiting regularly, lots of plants, and animals. Dogs, cats, birds.
Wow. That must have been chaotic.
Maybe a little. But It completely changed the atmosphere. It went from being a sort of medical holding pen to a real living environment.
And the idea was?
To combat those three plagues directly. Giving residents something to care for, a plant, a pet, restores purpose. Having spontaneous interactions with kids and animals fights loneliness and boredom.
It replaces helplessness with, well, responsibility meaning.
Exactly. And it proved that you can make meaningful change just by shifting the focus. Moving away from pure medical efficiency towards, you know, human well-being. Recognizing that dignity requires some choice, maybe even a little risk.
Okay, so purpose is vital. But purpose often depends on function.
That's right.
Being able to do things.
Mm-hmm. And this is where Gawande points out another major failure of the standard medical approach, especially with aging.
The difference between treating a specific disease and dealing with general frailty.
Yes. He highlights the work of a geriatrician, Felix Silverstone, who explains this so well.
Okay.
Traditional medicine excels at the fix-it model. You know, cure the infection, fix the broken bone, remove the tumor.
Right. Targeted interventions.
But Silverstone points out that aging, true frailty, isn't usually about one thing. It's the complex decline across multiple systems. Lots of little things going wrong together.
And our fix-it approach doesn't handle that complexity well.
Not really. Because the issue isn't just the individual problems. It's the loss of what he calls reserve capacity.
Reserve capacity, meaning?
Think of it like spare energy, resilience. A younger person gets pneumonia, gets aggressive treatment, and they bounce back because they have reserves.
Okay.
But a frail, older person, they don't have that buffer. An aggressive treatment, even if it cures the one specific thing.
The treatment itself can wipe them out.
Precisely. The recovery, the side effects, the sheer physical toll, it can destroy the remaining function, leaving them worse off overall, even if the original problem is fixed.
So the implication for us, for listeners, is when dealing with frailty, the goal needs to change.
It has to. It shouldn't automatically be cure at all costs. It should be about maximizing function, preserving quality of life.
Because sometimes the aggressive cure actually destroys the very quality of life people are trying to hold on to.
Exactly what people fear most often. Losing independence, losing function.
Which leads us directly into another really tough section, the part he calls the courage to let go.
Yes. This is where he tackles the medical culture head on.
The idea that admitting limits, that saying we can't cure this, is seen as failure. Surrender.
Mm-hmm. A deep-seated cultural thing in medicine.
Yeah.
Always fight, always intervene.
But this denial, this push for more treatment, even when it's futile, it causes immense suffering, doesn't it?
Horrible suffering. He gives these heartbreaking examples. You know, patients with very advanced cancer getting round after round of brutal chemo right up until their last days or weeks.
Spending that precious final time feeling sick, weak, maybe confused.
For what? For maybe a statistically insignificant chance of a few more weeks of just existing, often cut off from family, unable to enjoy anything, the treatment itself guarantees a bad ending.
So this is where the idea of redefining hope comes in.
Absolutely crucial. When a cure isn't realistic, hope doesn't just disappear. It has to shift.
Shift to what?
To achievable goals.
Okay.
Hope for comfort. Hope to be free from pain. Hope to have meaningful time with family. Hope to maintain dignity.
Hope for a good day.
Yes. Those are things medicine can often help achieve. The role changes from warrior against death to supporter of life, however much time is left.
And making that shift, achieving that kind of hope, hinges on one thing medicine often avoids.
Honest communication. The hard conversations.
Right. He brings in the work of palliative care expert Susan Block here.
Yeah, her framework is so practical, so powerful. It's a roadmap for everyone involved, doctors, patients, families.
Instead of just listing treatment options.
She says you need to understand the person's goals first. Ask the essential questions.
Like,
what is your understanding of where you are with your illness? Get on the same page about the reality.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then, what are your fears
and
what are your hopes? Understand what they're worried about and what they still wish for.
Fears and hopes. Got it.
And then the really key one, the one you mentioned.
The trade-offs question. What does a good day look like?
Exactly. What trade-offs are you willing to make for the possibility of more time? Or, put differently, what's the minimum quality of life you'd find acceptable? What does a good day involve for you?
Why is that so revolutionary? It seems simple.
It seems simple, but it forces the conversation away from the abstract medical possibilities and grounds it in the patient's actual lived experience.
Okay.
So if a patient says, a good day means being clear-headed enough to talk with grandkids or strong enough to sit outside.
Then a treatment that causes constant confusion or weakness is actively preventing a good day for them.
Right. Even if it might shrink a tumor on a scan. It helps align the medical plan with the person's real priorities.
And his whole framework, these hard conversations, this is what Gwande went through with his own father.
Yes, that's the emotional core of the book, really. Because they had those conversations, his father could articulate what mattered most to him.
Which was?
Things like staying social, avoiding paralysis, not wanting to be a burden on his family, very specific personal goals.
And knowing that helped them make decisions later.
Immensely. When treatments became more burdensome than beneficial, that clarity allowed his father and the family to choose quality of life over more aggressive, ultimately futile interventions.
It shows that real courage isn't about fighting blindly.
No, it's about clarity. It's about knowing what you value and living according to those values right to the end.
Okay, let's try and pull together some of the main threads here, the core themes running through the whole book.
Sure. Well, the first one that just jumps out is the absolute primacy of autonomy and purpose.
People needing control over their own lives.
Yes. And Gwanjo's example after example of people willing to accept certain risks, maybe falling if they walk outside, or having a pet that isn't perfectly hygienic, if it means they can maintain that control, that sense of self, and do things that give their life meaning.
Which ties right into the next theme, doesn't it? That flawed idea of safety versus well-being.
Totally connected. We've become obsessed with physical safety and elder care, especially.
Creating these risk-free environments.
But often, they're also joy-free, meaning-free environments. We need a balance. We need to respect people's right to choose their own risks if it aligns with what they value most.
Okay, so autonomy, balancing safety and well-being. What else?
The huge theme of quality over quantity of life.
That relentless push for just more time, regardless of the condition.
Right. Gwande argues that this often leads to outcomes that patients themselves, if they truly understood and had a choice, would absolutely reject.
So the real goal shouldn't just be longevity.
No. The real goal is helping people live well for whatever time they actually have left.
And that ties back to the last big theme we talked about, redefining hope.
It does. Hope isn't just about finding a cure, especially when one isn't possible.
It's hope for a good life, hope for comfort, hope for dignity.
Exactly. Hope for things that are achievable, even when facing the end. That kind of hope is realistic and sustaining.
The book is just full of lines that really stick with you, isn't it? Phrases that capture these big ideas.
Oh, definitely. There are a few that really encapsulate the whole message for me.
What's one?
My absolute favorite has to be, our ultimate goal, after all, is not a good death, but a good life to the very end.
Wow. Yeah, that just flips the whole perspective, doesn't it?
Completely. It shifts the focus from the clinical event of dying to the human experience of living.
I was really struck by his diagnosis of the institutions. The three plagues of nursing home existence are loneliness, helplessness, and boredom.
So Sark. So true. It names the spiritual emptiness that can happen.
And then there's the challenge he throws down to his own profession.
Ah, yes. We've been wrong about what our job is in medicine. It is to enable well-being.
That's huge. Moving beyond just fixing the biology.
To supporting the whole person, their life, their goals.
And one more, about facing mortality itself.
The definition of courage. Courage is strength in the face of knowledge of what is to be feared or hoped.
Meaning true strength is clarity, seeing things as they are, not denial.
Exactly. Knowing the reality, understanding the fears and the hopes, and making choices based on that knowledge. That's real courage.
So, okay, bringing this home for everyone listening. What does this actually mean for you? How can we apply these powerful insights in our own lives?
Well, the most immediate thing, I think, is to initiate that hard conversation now.
Don't wait for a crisis.
Please don't. Use those questions. Gwande highlights fears, hopes, trade-offs, what makes a good day. Talk to your loved ones. Talk to your doctor.
Even talk to yourself about these things. Get clear on your own values.
Absolutely. Get those priorities understood, maybe even written down, so they can guide decisions if or when the time comes.
Okay, what else? Become a better advocate.
Yes, become a better advocate in healthcare settings, whether it's for yourself or someone you love.
Oh, what do you ask?
Shift the questions. Don't just ask what treatments are available. Ask, what will this treatment actually feel like?
How will it impact my ability to do the things that matter to me?
Precisely. What's the likely impact on my function, on my quality of life? Demand honest answers about the experience of the treatment, not just the statistics.
Good point. And thirdly, thinking about elder care.
rethink how we choose elder care. If you're looking at options for a parent or loved one, use Gawande's lens.
Don't just look at the safety checklist.
Look beyond it.
Yeah.
Ask, how does this place promote autonomy? Where's the community? Is there purpose here? Look for signs of real life, the gardens, the pets, the intergenerational programs.
Prioritize dignity, choice, meaning, not just institutional tidiness.
Exactly. Look for places trying to fight those three plagues.
So, stepping back for a final thought, the biggest takeaway for me is this profound shift in perspective the book offers.
Mm-hmm.
Gawande really shows that the biggest failure at the end isn't death itself. Death is inevitable.
Right.
The real failure is the unnecessary suffering, physical, emotional, spiritual, that comes from avoiding the hard truths, avoiding those essential conversations.
That's it, exactly. The book teaches us that facing limits, acknowledging mortality, isn't weakness. It's not giving up.
It's actually the most courageous, most human thing we can do.
It allows us to redirect our energy, our medical resources, our love, towards what can be achieved.
Helping people live as fully and meaningfully as possible for whatever time remains.
Yeah. And what really surprised me reading it was realizing the tools we need for this better ending.
Yeah.
They aren't some futuristic technology or miracle drug.
No.
No, they're ancient human skills, listening deeply, truly understanding what matters to another person.
And having the courage, personal courage, institutional courage, to align what we do with those human values.
It sounds simple, but it requires a massive shift. But the book ultimately leaves you with hope, I think.
Me too. Hope that we can actually learn to navigate mortality with more grace, more purpose, and more humanity.
Well said.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.